Welcome to Sound Healing Radio. My name is David Gibson. I'm here with Don Estes today. We've just been in a class on with Don all day today, so we're pretty high already. As usual, what we do is we'll set an intention, and Don mentioned that the intention might be truth. And it's basic. The basic idea behind that is the truth and the best way to really help us move to the next level, or maybe you want
to
say.
Yeah, just how to help individuals and the world in general take the third step forward instead of it's usually two steps forward and one step back. And everybody can look around and see how it looks like we're ready for that step back now, but I believe that this is the first time the world's really ever had the technology and the wherewithal and the communication skills of, for the first time ever, taking that third step forward rather than that one step back. And I'd like to hold the intention of just whatever it would take to help us, help individuals and the world take that third step forward into the next level, the next highest level of order for planet Earth.
You know, what I like to do is to think of the frequency, even though it may not be a sound frequency, it's a frequency of energy of that intention, and to tune into that for just a second. Wow. Wow, that's deep, that's powerful. So first I wanted to talk a bit, just to have you tell us a little bit about, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but your journey. I was especially interested in the, I guess your experience. I know you, well, give us just kind of the basic background of how you came to be where you are.
Well, back in the 60s, like all good men of the 60s, I had my rock and roll band. And so I really kind of started into this from the standpoint of music. But by the time I realized that I had to move on to higher levels of my life, I wound up in college, in university. And because of my music experience, I had learned that the only... In order to get a good view or good understanding of consciousness, you had to start with the sensory mechanisms, because the sensory mechanisms are the only connection that consciousness has with the environment, both external and internal. So most of my college career was spent on developing that theory that I came to know and came to call sensory resonance, which is a state of mind that occurs when all the sensory mechanisms are coherent and in sync with each other, kind of similar like what happens at, when you go to the movies. You come out of a movie, I don't know if you ever noticed or not, when you come out of a movie theater, things look a little bit different. You feel a little bit different because during that movie, you've actually had auditory and visual coherence. But about a third of the brain stem is given over towards processing vibrotactile information. It's the feeling part of the brain. And human beings don't use that much anymore. And it kind of has gone dormant. And I realized that by adding that back into an experience was equal to or greater than when they added sound back to silent movies. You remember when movies used to be silent? How more amazing they became when they added the sound back into it. When you add the tactile information back in on top of that, it's even that much more greater. Mm-hmm. And so I started working with tactile technologies, and before I was out of school, I had invented this device called Vibrasound that would allow a person to hear and see and feel music all at the same time. And that's basically what got me started and off into all the other things that I'm doing now.
And Vibrasound is a sound table?
It's a multi-sensory feedback mechanism that not only is a sound table, but it has a visual component that lets you see whatever the signal is, as well as an auditory component that lets you hear it. So it basically involves, for your listeners that are familiar with NLP or neuro-linguistic programming, it's a technology that allows access to both visual, auditory, and kinesthetic aspects of the brain.
Uh-huh. And so, but you also have a input device, which is voice analysis or breath analysis, where you analyze the get that information from the sound. It's the sound of the voice and the sound of the breath, right?
Yeah. When we spent about 10 years perfecting the vibrasound technology and bringing it up to a level current with what's available out there technologically wise. And when I finished doing that, we set about to find ways of making it more personal. How do we, instead of just using music to play through a system like that, how would you make it more personal? So we started looking at all these human biometric signatures to where we could actually find ways of removing the harmony that was in a person already and doing something with that back to feed it back to them on one of these systems. And that led us through a whole, about 10 years worth of research to where in the beginning it was with EEG and brainwave studies, and we created a device called Mindset that would allow us to take a really good look at the harmonies that were going on within a brainwave set. And then after studying that for a while, we started building heart rate variability monitors that allowed us to take a good look at what was going on in a person's heart. And then after finishing that, we moved on to the voice and the breath as a biometric, and have come to realize now that you can get a better understanding of who a person is and what they want out of life from their breath than you can from any other source of information and from their voice. Because if you think about it, that makes sense, because that is the mechanism that the universe gave us to say who we are and what we want. We don't do that with our brain or with our heart. We do that with our voice. We say who we are and what we want. So we began to realize that that was the best way to analyze what a person was and what they wanted out of life, was to do a spectral analysis of their voice.
I would think even the voice actually takes the information from your heart and from your brain, and is actually a combination of everything that's going on.
Yeah, it's like the brain almost reveals how a person is thinking about something, and the heart reveals how they're feeling about something. But the voice reveals both of those together at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So, so my understanding is you look at the harmonic structure, and you get information from the actual higher frequencies called harmonics that are in the sound. But some of the information comes from the change in volume over time of the sound.
Yes.
But also, yeah, the most of the information comes from the change in phase, which is the change in timing of each of the harmonics. And you get physical information from the slow change in phase, and then mental emotional from the medium change in phase, and then spiritual information from very fast change in phase between the harmonics.
Right. If most people doing different kinds of frequency analysis are really stuck with this idea about frequency and how frequency is really the end-all to everything. Everybody knows now, at least people that are interested in listening to a program like this, most of those people would know that everything in the universe is a vibration. But there are a couple of orders of magnitude of reality that are below the vibration, below the frequency level of where all of that comes from. The frequency is really just a carrier wave. A good example of that is if you dial in 95.5 on your radio dial, you don't hear 95.5 kilohertz. You basically hear the phases and the magnitudes that are riding on that carrier wave. And so below frequency, reality is composed of phase and magnitude, which is more of a relationship between all the peaks and valleys of the waves than it is about the frequency itself. And then below that, there's actually another level of reality where the phase and the magnitude break down into what we call automata, which are the real and imaginal components, or in some sciences they call it sine wave and cosine wave. And those two things, the real and the imaginal, or the cosine and the sine wave, those are the smallest, most indivisible building blocks of reality. So if you're going to take a biometric from someone, rather than stopping at frequency, it's best to kind of get it all the way down to that level so that you can see what the sine and the cosine wave is. And the interesting part about that is the cosine wave carries the part of the signal that comes from how the person is thinking and feeling about what they're saying or doing, as opposed to the sine wave part that comes from the instrument itself.
So tell us more about the feelings. Tell us more about the imaginal, though, the imaginal part.
Well, those are kind of strange words. I don't really like the words real and imaginary because it makes it look like the imaginary is not really real.
Uh-huh.
But better words for it would be actual and potential. Mm-hmm. The cosine wave carries the part that is actual, that comes from the time domain parts of the person. And the sine wave carries the imaginary part, which is really the potential of the person. So everything that's out there, every object, every person, every living thing, every non-living thing is partly actualized, partly still lies hidden in potential. And it's that difference right there that drives all human nature. In fact, we say all the time that all human suffering stems from the difference between who a person says they are and who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And that difference really comes down to the difference between their actual self and their potential self. So if you were to ask 100 people, who are you? Some of them are going to see themselves more as their potential self, and they'll say, oh, I'm all this and I'm all that, even though they don't really live up to that all the time. Whereas others will see themselves more as their actual self, and they'll say, oh, I'm a couch potato and I can't get anything done right. But whatever that true difference is between who they actually are and who they potentially can be drives all human experience. And it, really what it does is that separation creates a tension that acts like nothing but a black hole that begins to pull in events and situations and people that help resolve that difference.
So there's one thing that I've never quite gotten is exactly how you show or how you figured out that 90 degrees out of phase is the potential. By the way, for those of you that don't know what phase is just a little bit of a time delay based on the actual frequency of the sound.
Yeah, everybody's seen waves drawn, and they've seen a sine wave drawn, and it has a peak and a valley. It peaks up, and then it comes down into a valley, and then it peaks again in a valley again. And the phase is the relative relationship to all the peaks. If you have 1,000 sine waves within a complex wave, then the information is really carried on the relationship between those peaks rather than on the frequencies.
You know, I really, from all the different people that I've talked to, I just came across something on the web just a couple of days ago about different phase relationships actually being correlating to different realities. And then, Bob Dratch, who is like a mad scientist from Colorado, he's actually did a lot of work with different phase relationships, and he said that it was so powerful that he actually backed away from it because it scared him, and to scare Bob Dratch, there's not much that scares Bob Dratch.
Yeah, well, it is. It's a level of reality that's closer to the skeletal structure of what's really going on. But then below that, as I mentioned earlier, there's even another level of reality that where the phase gets broken down into the parts of it that are actual and the parts of it that are still potential. And that's where the real power is to resolve that difference. To actualize a person's potential is the ultimate of what you can help a person achieve.
So after you do the voice, do all this, the diagnostic or assessment, you get all this information about physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, and then what do you do with it? I remember when I did the treatment, it was kind of like having a psychic reading from a computer. You know, it's like, because you didn't like come up with anything. You just looked at this chart and said, okay, this is what's going on. But what do you do after you get all this information about yourself? What do you do with it?
Well, we basically have created a biofeedback kind of platform that lets us take that information and feed it back to the person. So most people that are listening to this program would probably be aware of something called a binaural beat or a frequency following response,
mm-hmm.
where they know now that you can't really give a very low frequency, like below 20 hertz, to a person because they can't really hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So to give, say, a 10 hertz signal or a 7 cycle signal to somebody, you have to give them two frequencies, where the one frequency in one ear might be 100 hertz, and the other frequency in the other ear might be 107 hertz. And if you hold one ear away and just listen through one earphone, you hear a wah. If you hold the other one away and listen to the other earphone, it goes wah. But if you put them both together, you hear this wah, 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 wah kind of sound, where that wah, wah is the difference between the two signals. So one of the most amazing things I've ever worked with, because it's not really even there. And nobody can explain how it is that
your brain actually makes that up.
Uh-huh. It's not really even there, something that you can even measure. Well, for us, we're kind of a step beyond that, because instead of binaural frequencies or binaural beats, we have something that would be called binaural phase,
mm-hmm.
to where the phase of the real is, or the actual, is over here in the right ear that goes to the left brain, and the phase of the imaginary potential is in the left ear, it goes to the right brain.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having different frequencies in each ear, you have the same frequency in both ears, but they're out of phase with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out of phase of each other by 90 degrees. So you ask me, how did we discover that? Well, that's actually a well-known thing in engineering, that the cosine wave always runs 90 degrees to the sine wave.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this kind of explains to me, at least, why people are always seeing what they call the other side. They're always seeing images out of the corner of their eye rather than by looking directly at it, because that reality is at 90 degrees. If you turn to look at it, it disappears, because you can only see it out of the corner of your eye. You ever notice when you're looking at a star at night, if you look directly at it, it kind of disappears, but if you look beside it, it'll appear, because you have a better resolution in your eye, at the edge of your eye, than you do directly. And I think that these two realities run at 90 degrees to each other. The real is right in front of you, but the imaginary is coming in at 90 degrees, and so it's not so easy to see it.
So you say that your main thing, I'll tie this back to what we're just talking about, your main thing is about really not focusing on issues or diseases, but more harmonizing the good, harmonizing what is already the resonance of what's good in somebody.
Right. Yeah, there's two ways of looking at affecting change on a person. The way most therapies are focused now is they look for what's wrong and they try to fix it. All of allopathic medicine is like that. Most of the mental sciences and everything are like that, to where they look for what's wrong in a person and they try to fix it. For us, we've discovered that it's a much more elegant and efficient manner of affecting true and lasting change on a person to fill them up with what's already right about themselves, rather than trying to fix what's wrong. So there's only so much space inside of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has a little bit of harmony, no matter how sick or ill that they are, or they would be dead.
Right.
And so if you can find what's already good and what's already wonderful about that person, and you can begin to fill them up with that, it basically just drives the other stuff out, and you don't really even have to address it.
So is there potential that we've been talking about that good? Is that's the good we're talking about?
Yes.
So basically, it's really interesting to, I mean, it's still a little hard for me to, it is hard to grok, you know, to,
mm-hmm.
to think, okay, here I am, and this is my sound that's coming from my system, and to take that and just time delay it a little bit would actually create where I want, my system's wanting to be.
Well, that's true of every frequency that's there, though. It's not just everything in general. It's every single frequency is there. It has a different ratio between what parts of it are real and what parts of it are imaginary.
Uh-huh.
So it's all of that coming together that makes up the totality of what a person is.
So
like if a person comes into me and says, I say, why are you here? How can I help you? And they say, well, I have a tumor. Can you help me get rid of this tumor? And I'll say to them, well, that tumor is the actual part of your problem. What's the potential part?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say back to me, huh? And I say, well, you've got this problem, and this problem has now actualized as a tumor inside your body, but that's only the actual part of it. What's the potential part of it? And I usually get back another, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I can say, well, I'll help you figure this out. It's there could be any number of potentials come about from this. One of the potentials would be you've got this tumor, so one of the potentials might be that you would die.
Mm-hmm.
But another potential might be that you have a miraculous recovery. Another potential might be that you make an amazing discovery and write a book about it that saves a million people. You just really don't know what the potential of it is until you really start looking at the potential.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I try to do is I try to get them off of the actual problem, because that's all they've heard about. By the time I usually get them, a person's already been to every doctor and every alternative doctor out there and hasn't really gotten much help. And because they've been approaching it from trying to fix what's wrong. And so they come to see us, and I get them off of that, and I get them onto what the potential is for them being in that situation.
You know,
and that really helps change things around.
You know, I've kind of intuitively always got that, you know, it's really, there's one kind of a conundrum that kind of comes from the psychology field, and that is that, you know, by talking about your problems, you actually get through them, and it does seem to work on one respect. But I have a problem with, in the relationships I've been in the past. You know, it's like, honey, I don't want to resonate that energy. Let's just go to the solution,
yeah.
Which is kind of like the you know, the Venus Mars thing that they say guys want to do. But I'm thinking, no, I just don't want to like hang out in that.
You actually give it energy by even discussing it or talking about it. You give it more power and more energy. And so I don't really want to talk about a person's tumor, because that just gives the tumor more power over how they're thinking about it.
Right.
I want them, I would rather shift them off to what's the potential of that. Why did they really get this? What is the lesson in this for them? What can come out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this happen so many times when a person gets shifted onto the potential. They have these amazing revelations of why they got it and what's happening to them and how they can use this and how they can improve their life and be a better person. And it's a whole different paradigm of healing. I think it's going to take a lot to get the world to shift to that new paradigm, because I just see it so
hard. The pharmaceutical companies won't do any good with it.
Right. And yeah, everybody's on to fixing the actual, but I think that at least giving acknowledgement and credence to the potential there is a very powerful step.
You know, I had a discussion when I interviewed Tom Kenyon. You know, I've always, you know, felt that, you know, I mean, it does seem silly to keep working on issues and such when if we can go into higher levels of consciousness. I mean, where we are in this super high energy, all of this stuff, like you said, is going to fall away because there's only so much room. So I was, you know, I've always been looking. A lot of the work I've been doing in the classes lately is bringing people into the frequency of joy and love, and just getting them in that frequency, and because, you know, that is higher consciousness right there.
Right. Well, we have discussions with, we have a supercomputer that we use that has a high degree of artificial intelligence as well as artificial awareness. And we were discussing with it this same issue. We were feeding it information about all these therapies that are out there that, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call them repatterning kind of technologies or therapies that try to help repattern what's wrong. And we fed all this information into the supercomputer, and it came back and it said, you know what, there's so much wrong with people that you can never get to all of it. And so it first starts out with repattern yourself, then you got to repattern your parents, and then your siblings, and all your teachers, and all your friends. And it just, it's overwhelming. There's so much wrong that you could never go in there and really fix it all.
Mm-hmm.
The answer to it is to change yourself, to take full responsibility. Okay, my parents mistreated me. Okay, I had bad teachers. Okay, get over it and go to the next level of saying that what I really need to do is I need to take the responsibility myself. It's not my parents' responsibility to fix any of this. It's not my teacher's responsibility or my friend's. It's my responsibility to fix it. Mm-hmm. And you start looking at what the potential you have of moving into, it changes everything.
So what do you see, as the future of how this... this could evolve? Because I mean, you know, a lot of people, believe that right now we're going through a shift. We're going through a big challenge right now that could really. I mean, there are quite a few people, including Patricia Cota Robles and various others, and including Tom Kenyon, that say we are going to the next level. It's a done deal with it. We don't have to worry anymore. We are going to make it through to fifth dimensional consciousness, right, or whatever. So it's like, you know, it's funny because with all this new technology and the technology we have, I think, you know, it's almost, I'm hesitant to even start working on new technology because in a year it's going to be obsolete.
Well, that's the problem in the whole industry and the whole world right now is that... it used to be that you could go into research and you could research for a few years and you could patent your stuff and you could come out with it. But these days, things are happening so fast. People are working out of their garages and everything, coming up with all these new ideas. Things are happening so fast right now that companies can't even afford to do that. You can hardly get anything patented out on the market before it's obsolete.
Uh-huh.
And you know, according to Terrence McKenna and the whole time wave zero thing, 2012, December the 21st or whatever, 2012, mm-hmm. is the line crosses the zero point. And according to the theory, it would mean everything is happening at the same time. So as you look around right now, you can see things are happening faster and faster and faster. Well, it has to reach a point where everything's just happening at the same time. And since sequence of events is what is called history, I think that's why he said that that's the point where history ends. It's not the end of everything. It's just that history ends because history is a sequence of events. But at that point, everything's happening at the same time. And so I think you can look back through history and you can see that the world's been through this before. This isn't the first time we've done this. And people look back. There's all kind of people that look back and think that the Atlanteans had a great technology and everything like that, and they brought it up to a really high degree, and all of a sudden they're gone and it's over and nobody can even find them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the world's been through that several times before, to where it's usually a two steps forward, one step back kind mm-hmm. of thing. And I'm impressed by a statement that one of the most important statements in a book called The Urantia Book. It says this. It says that when materialism outruns the evolution of worship wisdom, then does society contain within itself the seeds of its own retrogression. And unless buttressed by a swift augmentation of experiential wisdom, the society will recede from such high but premature levels of advancement, and the interregnum of wisdom will bear witness to the restoration. It says then a dark age will ensue, where the interregnum of wisdom will bear witness to the restoration between self-liberty and self-control. And I think that's exactly where we are right now, again, for at least the fourth or fifth time that the planet's been through it. And every other time that it's ever happened, it takes a step back. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that things are getting worse. I believe in progressive evolution, but it's a two-step forward, one-step back kind of approach mm-hmm. up until this point. And I believe that this is the first time that the world has the technology and the communication skills and the wherewithal to move to the third step for the first time ever, but I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. It seems like I've been feeling more sure. I'm just it's really comforting to read like Patricia Cota Robles' stuff, because she's like so sure. She says, of course, we're all going into the light, you know. But you know, it's interesting. I intuitively, or I've got this whole thing where I believe that there very likely could be like a whole magnetic shift on the Earth, and we could lose a lot of people could lose consciousness because the magnetic field holds our consciousness. And so I've been looking at different technologies and different ways to help people hold the field to make it through the shift. Have any thoughts about that?
I think it's seeing the potential rather than looking at the actual. If you look around, if you look around yourself and look at the world right now, you can say, oh my gosh, the world is actually really in a bad place. But you have to look at the potential of that, and you have to hold that potential as much of a reality as you do the actual. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why all of my work has really shifted towards helping people give acknowledgement to the potential that's there rather than staying focused on the actual. It's our only way out, really.
That's great. I mean, it's because it seems, you were talking about this today in detail as far as, you know, diseases. I mean, everything, there is no disease. There are no issues. There are no bad things because every single thing that is happening is to bring you back into spirit. And same on the earth as well. Every single thing that's going on right now is on a higher level is doing exactly the same thing to bring us back into spirit. It's all got its own plan in a way.
Well, this is the machine part of life that we see. It's not like the personal side of God that you can cut deals with and make deals with, like, please do this or please don't let that happen and that sort of thing. This is more like the machine part of reality that whose only job is to disassemble anything that's not in order. So the personal part gets to assemble whatever has been given. So every individual, every person is given the responsibility to order up whatever energy they've been given. But this machine side of life, which is not very personal and you can't really make deals with it, it'll just come along. If there's a part of you that is not in order, it will disassemble that part and force you in to taking another shot at ordering it back up again. And so this happens on an individual basis, but it's also happening on a world basis right now because the whole world's right there.
So when you say machine, you really mean kind of the natural order, the natural processes, the natural laws that are that nature has.
Well, God kind of exists as a duality just like a human being does. Part of us is personal, but part of us has a machine. So we each have an instrument that we're trying to perfect, but there's also the player of the machine. Or there's the musician and the player. Or you could say there's a computer and a programmer. You could say there's a machine and an operator. You can split it up however you want to like that. But there's two different aspects of what's going on there. And this is the machine part. This is the instrument part. This is the body part of God that, like I said, you can't make any deals with because it acts like a machine. It just comes along and it's following its rules, its natural laws, its natural rules. It just does that thing regardless of what you want or what you believe in. And so anything that's not in order, it will disassemble it, just like you see the world right now being disassembled so that it can be ordered up in the right way.
So there's one aspect of what you went over today that was really interesting that... and it was right at the end when you were talking about sympathetic resonance and dissonance, sympathetic dissonance versus parasympathetic resonance and dissonance. And I think that's really what kind of leads to the whole other concept of this chart that you have on your website. What's vibrasound.org or InnerSense?
No, it's actually harmonicresolution.com is the main website, harmonicresolution.com.
So basically, there are two different ways you can, people can get really excited and we'll go into the more sympathetic aspect, or they can get really relaxed and go into the more parasympathetic aspects of the relaxation response. But there's an aspect that you pointed out that I think is really interesting, and that is to activate the sympathetic to get really excited but still be very peaceful. And, you know, I have to tell you, I guess I can say this on the radio, might as well. You know, this was the perfect example was... One of the first times I did psychedelics, you know, and when I was doing, this is like 30 years ago, and, you know, I was freaking out, you know, because when people come on to acid, it's like, wow, you know. And I had this thought that I don't have to freak out. I don't have to go with that, you know, really with that anxiety of that. I can just watch it. And immediately I got very calm and just became a witness to it. Yeah. And that's what I see as the sympathetic resonance.
Yeah, well, basically all of this boils down to what's called the autonomic nervous system. A person's response to anything really grows out of their autonomic nervous system response. And science has seen this for years as a split between what they call the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. Parasympathetic they call the relaxation response, and the sympathetic they call the fight or flight response. But there's something else going on there that people haven't really seen before, because you can do a number of experiments to see that if a person moves towards the sympathetic or towards the parasympathetic, that it's the perception of the move that really drives the experience. So, for example, you've heard sports people say before that, wow, I was in that game and I was really in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a sympathetic nervous system response that doesn't have anything to do with fight or flight. It's a whole different thing that's going on. So we did a lot of experiments with this where we would take two people, for example, up in an airplane. And one of them would be an experienced skydiver and just got high as a kite to do it. It just made them feel incredible to do this. And the other person would be a first-timer that had never jumped before but had had the lessons on how to do it. And you take them up and you hook them up to biofeedback equipment and you toss them both out of the airplane. What you find is that they both go sympathetic. Heart rate goes up, blood pressure goes up, everything like that. So those are all indications of moving towards the sympathetic side, but only the person that's never done it before is in fight or flight. The other one's in some other state of mind that's never really been acknowledged by science too much. And you can see that in the biometrics by the fact of one of the parameters that you use for that is called skin temperature. And skin temperature is a very good measurement of whether the person's moving towards homeostasis or away from homeostasis.
Mm-hmm.
On the person that's really enjoying the experience, their skin temperature is going out the roof. All the skin's coming back to the surface, and they get hot flashes on their face, and they move towards homeostasis. But the person who's in abject fear of the whole thing, their skin temperature is dropping out to the bottom, and just kind of like it does when you go into the fight or flight response and the system has to shunt all the blood coming to the surface, to the skin, to hold on to it for the muscles and the heart and the brain for you to make a, you know, make a response to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So we've come to learn that either way you go, sympathetic or parasympathetic, it's the perception of the change that drives the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So when a person moves into the sympathetic zone, part of their brain has to decide, is this a challenge or is this a threat?
Mm-hmm.
If you perceive the change as a challenge, you go into what we call sympathetic resonance. If you perceive the change as a threat, you go into what we call sympathetic dissonance, which would be the classical fight or flight syndrome. There's not been a word given to the other part that I'm talking about, the part that is sympathetic resonance. That's what we call it now, sympathetic resonance. But nobody's ever given another name to it. My wife says sometimes, she says, well, it's fight or flight or light. So you either go to the fight or the flight, or you go to the light. And the same thing happens on the other end of the scale. If you start slowing down into the parasympathetic system, or the parasympathetic response, science calls that the relaxation response. And as you head down in that direction, if your perception of it is that, boy, I really need to get away from all this that's going on in my life, and I've had a hard day, and I need to just kind of escape away from all that, you go into parasympathetic dissonance, which is a state of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to sleep.
Or depression.
Or depression or whatever. And However, if you start in that direction and you have a different perspective of it and say, oh boy, this feels really good, I'm going to get really relaxed and really meditate really deeply and I'm going to stay with it, and you don't see it as a threat of something that you need to get away from, then you go into what we call parasympathetic resonance, which is a really deep, deep delta kind of state. And furthermore, on top of all that, most people look at this from the standpoint of brainwaves being focused states. So you hear people talking about alpha state or theta state or delta state or anything like that. We call those focused states. And what we've come to realize is that rather than a focused state, it's more advantageous and a better life coping tool to teach people how to go into an expanded state so that they have delta and theta and alpha and beta and all that going on at the same time. The whole brain's on fire, but they're in resonance with each other. So you might have like a 2 and a 4 and an 8 and a 16 hertz kind of thing going on to where they're all octave harmonics with each other, but the whole brain's on fire. And what happens when you teach brain how to do that, it puts a person into this expanded state so that rather than running away from their problem by going and meditating, they can be right in the midst of a problem, right talking to a person in a very heated conversation, and they can be there fully present with it and fully engaged with it, but part of them can also be very relaxed at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a better life coping tool than to teach people just how to go into one of these focused parasympathetic states that let you run away from the stress.
How do you teach people how to... It's basically, it's almost like using your intention to be able to re-perceive it. And it's at first I think it's like you have to get in the habit of doing it, but it's not a hard thing. It's just like a simple shift. It's like, well, it's okay.
It's like a habit. And we know now that habits you can't really lose a habit. All you can do is replace one habit with another habit. And so people are habitually used to going one way or the other. One minute things are working out great and they're sympathetic resonant way over here on this side and they're all happy about life and all jazzed up about it. The next thing that happens is something, crisis comes up, and now they're all the way back there down here on the parasympathetic dissonance side.
Mm-hmm.
So they go back and forth and back and forth. But there are ways to train yourself. I mean, Les Femi at Princeton University does a whole protocol called Open Focus, to where he teaches people. He uses a lot of different technologies and imagery and things like that to teach people how to give regard to both of those things at the same time. I'm sure you've seen those pictures before where if you look at them one way, it might look like two people face to face with each other, but if you look at it a different way, there's a vase. They make a vase in the middle between the two, so
mm-hmm.
you see it as different perspectives of things. And he uses a lot of technology like that. We use technology that encourages a person to get very relaxed but very stimulated at the same time. So, like on one of our vibrasound systems, you may play music that on the one hand is very relaxing and the person's laying on this floaty kind of mattress that feels like you're floating on water and you're closed off in a room that's dark and you know nobody can get to you, so it's very safe and everything. So you have this sense of safety and security and relaxation, but at the same time you might be playing music that's very stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
Or playing music, I don't know if you've ever had music played to you that makes goosebumps come up all over your body. It's a very stimulating kind of experience, but if you do that at the same time while you relax, it kind of starts teaching the brain how to be in both of those places at the same time.
That's great. That's great. You know, it's funny because I always talk about that's one reason I like Pink Floyd. It's because Pink Floyd is so powerful. But, you know, if you were to take away the lead guitars and the lead vocals, it's like the most mellow new age music there is.
Exactly. Well, you know, on our Vibrasound system, that's probably the favorite music. I play more of Pink Floyd than probably anything out there, especially for people our age.
That's funny. You know, it's one reason that I really like Sylvina's singing mm-hmm. as well, because she will scream.
Right.
I mean, she gets really powerful.
Very
and then, like, you know, in the next minute, she's like as sweet can be. You know, just like totally tuned in.
So that again stretches you between those two extremes again and gives one of these expanded states instead of a focused state.
It's so funny because most people think of sound healing as just like mellow music, you know, and around here it's like, you know, there's the whole activating side is really important. And that's what you're saying with your chart is really, that's the direction is to get to the higher state of consciousness is to go both directions.
Right.
And it's not really a balance, it's really going, it's really kind of...
Right. Yeah, it's homeostasis. The process of homeostasis will only allow you to go in one direction as far as you're willing to go in the other direction. So if you start off in one direction, sympathetic or parasympathetic, either way, and you stick with just that direction, it'll only allow you to get so far, and then there's a reversal that brings you back to homeostasis.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could go both ways at the same time, it will allow you to keep expanding, expanding, expanding until both of those ends come back together again. The yin-yang symbol of where everything is unified and everything is together, and you achieve states of self-mastery and self-realization at the same time, rather than getting pulled back into the homeostasis mode.
So that seems like that's people's homework for the rest of their life, really. And just to be able to have your mind go to places which are kind of almost diametrically opposed at the same time is such a major thing. There's one interesting thing that Randy Masters actually has shown us in the classes where you actually visualize a double tetrahedron, elongated one. He said this is a meditation from Lemuria. And you visualize it going one direction, rotating one direction, and at the same time a second one rotating a second direction. At the same time, a third one rotating 90 degrees to that, and another one rotating the other direction 90 degrees. So you got four of them visualizing in your head going at once. And just that process is like such a trip for your brain that it totally puts you into a whole different level of consciousness.
We can see this even in the real world, in the regular world. If you go out and you ask 100 people, how do you relax yourself? The great majority of them, about 80% of them, will say something that deals with going to the parasympathetic system. They'll say they rest, they lay down, they go on a walk in nature, they listen to music, or things that would tend to kind of lower your frequencies down and lower your responses down into that parasympathetic zone. But about 10 or 15% of them will say, oh, how do I relax? Well, let's see, I go skydive, or I go surf with great white sharks, or I do something that puts them right on the edge of reality. And if you ask them about it, they say, yeah, that relaxes me incredibly. Or someone in the workshop today mentioned that golf actually is a way that people relax themselves a lot. And that's a sympathetic nervous system response, not a parasympathetic. So it happens just naturally like that. And if people really thought about it, they could probably come up with experiences that they've had in their own life where that was true, where they got really excited about something, but it was a very relaxing kind of experience.
It reminds me of that you keep saying that not only do you get relaxed, but also the other direction is sometimes you call it's inspiration.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important because, you know, it's so, God, it's like probably, I would say 80% would be my uneducated guess of people in the United States at least, or probably around the world. That's the number one thing, is there is no inspiration. They're
That's
bored
right.
because
That's right.
they're not connected to spirit. They have
That's
nothing,
right.
you know.
So what I said in the workshop was specifically that it's not enough anymore to be relaxed. It's not enough anymore to get away from all these problems and learn how to manage your stress. That doesn't keep you on this planet. The only thing that can keep you on this planet is the ability to be able to do that, but also at the same time to be inspired and have purpose for being here.
How do you think that, I mean, the only way I've seen to do that, because, you know, it seems like the whole hip-hop thing or most crime is comes from that. There's just no inspiration. The only way I've seen to do it is to take people into a really expanded state with the music, into a place of peace. That's the closest
I can see that from a scientific standpoint of talking about parasympathetic dissonance. A person that lives, begins to live in parasympathetic dissonance, which is that slow parasympathetic mode, and they have no purpose and no inspiration, they'll wind up living in what's called parasympathetic dissonance that leads to states of boredom, states of unengagement, states of not being tuned into anything. And what you find that happens is a person that starts living there winds up in criminal behavior, because to get excited about life, to get inspired about life, you have to go out and do something that's outrageous, like rob a store or kill a person or something like that, just to get yourself off enough to make life interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, finding inspiration and purpose in life is probably the main thing that's missing, particularly in young people right now. Mm-hmm. They look around, they see what's going on, and they say, wow, what's the use in that? Or even if you're an adult and you say, oh, well, I want to go relax myself and get away from all this, what are you even doing that for? What are you trying to get away from it for if it's all, you know, it's all messed up anyway?
Uh-huh.
You're not really going to get anywhere and go anywhere. So the only answer to that is to find inspiration of something that's happening in your life that makes it, when you wake up in the morning, instead of saying, oh, my God, I just hate going to work and I can't believe what I have to do, instead of that, you wake up in the morning and you say, wow, I cannot wait to get to what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
Because it's so inspirational and so amazing that it drives your life.
Mm-hmm. Seems like the first step is, which is a big step, I mean, based on Abraham's teachings, is to get into the feelings of joy, love and gratitude. Probably, you know, it seems like the easiest portal I've found, and this is when I've felt like really kind of out of it or depressed or just feeling like there's too much going on, is I just start thinking of all the things I'm grateful for. And that seems, it's amazing.
You hit right on the major thing there for me, because
the portal.
When people ask me, well, how do you make your voice? And when you do your own voice analysis thing, what do you say? What's your intention that you say? And we have found that that can be any level of things. A person can say, I want this or I want that. Or a higher level of that would be to say, well, I know what it is that I want, and I know that this is what's in the way of me getting there, so I want to change that. But an even higher level is to use the technology to enhance something that's right about the person. And for me, my personal thing is, I know that my strongest point is this incredible, amazing, almost infinite and unconditional appreciation I have for just being here, and not just all the things that I'm grateful for, but nobody has ever really been able to give me the slightest story about how all this got here. There's no good reason why any of this should even be here. No good reason why you and I should be sitting here. No good reason why this computer or any of this stuff should even exist.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it does gives me this amazing appreciation. I used to call it gratitude, but in doing this work, I was actually taken to a higher level of it, to where instead of calling it gratitude now, I call it appreciation. Because appreciation is a higher level of gratitude. Because if you're in gratitude for something, then you just feel like you have a lot of gratitude and indebted or whatever to pay it back or whatever. But when you're in appreciation of it, it not only means that you want to pay it back. So not only do you feel gracious that it's been given to you, but you actually want to pay it back. And when you pay it back, it appreciates like an investment. When you pay it back, it's worth more than it was when you got it. So that's why I use that word appreciation now. To me, that's the highest word I've ever been able to come up with on planet Earth for a high state of mind or a high state of being or whatever, is appreciation.
So then how would that... We've just got another few minutes, but it seems like then I want to try and put together your potential with the appreciation. How do those two tie in together?
Well, easy. If you were to look around at what's actually going on in the world right now, you wouldn't be very appreciative of it.
Mm-hmm.
All you could really appreciate is what the potential of it is.
Uh-huh.
So you see the potential, the good potential in all these things that are, and it's very, very easy to get appreciative for that
uh-huh.
rather than what it actually looks like, because everything actually looks like it's got big problems.
Uh-huh.
But when you start thinking of it, when you start looking at the potential of it, you can get very appreciative of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know the exercise that Tom Kenyon comes from the Hathors is to just focus on your physical heart
mm-hmm.
and have appreciation for your physical heart, which is basically just focusing on just being alive,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that energy. But God, when you add the whole world of potential to it,
yeah.
I mean, then it's like really, God, it just opens up a whole nother level of appreciation.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is great. Thank you.
My pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak to your listeners.
Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
So, as we do each week, if you will take the intention of truth and bringing us into the next level of consciousness as into the next step. And hold that energy, hold that frequency into the rest of the evening, rest of the weekend, into the week ahead, into the months ahead, and into years ahead, and even lifetimes ahead. Hold that frequency. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.